Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Seth, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Seth.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. The group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. On that basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help alcoholics achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and to ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11. Please welcome to our panel this evening.
I'm Glenn, I'm an alcoholic. Glenn Mifflin.
Don Smith, alcoholic.
I guess I could have said that.
I thought you would.
Okay, I will read the first paragraph on page 85, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each other on the reading. Okay, step 11, sought the prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, or what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
All right. First of all, I'm a member of the Big Book and Ghent group. It meets on Tuesday at 5:30 at Christ of St. Luke's. I have a sponsor, and my sobriety date is January 16th, 1995. I'm a little bit of a stubborn individual, so I have a hard time being convinced that I need to do what it says. So please, if anybody's looking for an example, I'm not it. So just to let you know up front. It took me quite a few years to get to the point where I was willing to do what was necessary to stay sober. So this prayer and meditation being a suggestion, that's what I took it as, a suggestion, not a I have to type of thing. So I didn't do it for a long time. So about 7.5 years in, I hit a crisis of spirit and had to try to not drink and do the stuff out of the book. And that was the first time that I actually did what it says and came into contact with prayer, first of all, because I had to have something or someone provide me what I needed to stay sober from that point on. So I haven't been doing this the whole time I've so supposedly been sober, so I have to keep that in mind. But today, and as I've worked through the things that I've needed to work through, I do employ this particular technique with prayer and meditation because it's entirely necessary for me to do what it says in order for me to stay on the beam of sobriety. And meditation is also something that I've had to learn to work with because I have to hear what might be the answers to the problems that I'm going through, and the only way that I can hear that is if I get quiet. And that's what the meditation part of this whole thing does for me. It keeps, it gets me quiet, gets my mind cleared, hopefully, and I can do what I need to do. Now, again, being the rebellious type, I'm not going to do this every night like it suggests, because again, I feel like it's a suggestion. So, but when I'm in real need of answers, or when I'm really worked up about something, I will do this during the day. I will take quiet time during the day and I will pray for whatever answers I'm looking for, and then I will take some time in the quietness and see if there's anything that I need to do. But the first part of that is when I get quiet, those things that have been bothering me tend to lessen, and I'm not thinking about that all the time. It's funny how that works out. So anyway, that the prayer meditation is a technique. It's something that I have to practice. Like everything else in the steps, I have to practice this. And if I don't, then I'm not going to get any better at it. It's one of those things that has to go continuously, and if I don't, then I'm not going to have the benefits that I'm looking for. That's it.
I'm an alcoholic, Donald Smith. My home group is the West Kent group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. We have a book study and a discussion meeting, and everybody is welcome to join us. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. I have a sponsor, but I don't really talk to him much, so I don't guess I have a sponsor. This step for me is, it's one of the, we come here and they tell us that they give us tools that we're supposed to be learning how to use. And this is one of the tools in the toolbox. There's a whole bunch of them. This one is the least used tool in the toolbox. Almost no one does a nightly inventory. You get, your life takes off, you start working, things are happening, you get tired, you sit down on the couch, you have something to eat, sit on the couch and lay down, next thing you know you're asleep, and you get up and go into bed, or something similar to that. So the nights are taken up with everything you do during the day. And so in my life, that's what was happening to me. I started to do this when I first started doing this, and I did it for probably, 2 years maybe, and then I started slacking off a little bit. Then I talked to somebody, and the guy told me that the best thing to do is before you eat dinner or anything, if you're sitting at your desk at work, just push back a minute, stop what you're doing, and do a quick little list of the things you need to do for tomorrow, and you've done part of this inventory tonight. And then look at these questions. These questions come from, as everybody probably knows, the inventory that we do in the fourth step. And to me, these are all manifestations of self. Where am I being resentful, dishonest, selfish, and afraid? Do I owe an apology? This is like analyzing everything I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous from step one. Let me back up a minute. I was taught that step one, two, and three are consideration steps. I'm considering who I am, what's going on, how crazy things are. I consider whether not, you know, they say it's decision is made on step three. But really, I'm still making the consideration. Do I really want to do that? Because I'm not sure I want to do that. So then, you know, the action of step three is to take step four. And then, but step four is still a consideration, because what am I doing? I'm looking at who I am. I haven't really done anything. I'm just accurately trying to do a self-appraisal. Then step five is taking an action, and that's going to talk to somebody. Step six is another consideration step, where I consider, do I want to have these things removed from me? Step seven is asking for that to happen. That means to get on my knees and ask God to remove the defects of character as he would see fit, and the ones he sees fit to remove, he, she, it, whatever. Then step eight is me considering my list. Step nine is going out and doing what it is. Step 10 is then considering how I'm going to live the rest of my life by taking inventory, by making apologies when I have to. And I make a commitment. I consider that. I make a commitment to do it. But step 11 in the book is how I do that on a daily basis. And so it starts off at the nighttime rather than the morning. I don't know why they do it that way. Except for the fact that it's setting me up for the next day, which is a wonderful thing. You know, when you go through these questions, it is, to me, every time I answer these questions, I'm looking at things about myself that I wouldn't normally look at on a daily basis. It's been my experience that as an alcoholic, I don't know how to take an accurate personal self-appraisal. I have no clue how to do that. Unless I'm working the steps. And so I'm going through this part of the book, and I'm reading through it, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm doing this and doing that. And the thing I really loved about this was it says, what could I pack into the stream of life? You know, I never wanted to put anything in. I wanted to take it away. It was my experience. I wanted to get stuff out of life. They were supposed to give me things. I was supposed to go out and fight for it and do all this stuff. But today, I'm reorientating my attitude, so I'm not being resentful. Resentful is me being angry at somebody and trying to get revenge, because I love revenge, you know. Robert? selfish. Where am I being selfish? I mean, I'm in a room of alcoholics, right? We all know what selfish means, right? You can't see past your own nose about what's going on with somebody else, because the whole world revolves around me. You know? You're a peripheral thing in my world. Where am I being dishonest? I mean, there's places of where I'm dishonest. I don't even know it sometimes until I sit down and look at it. You know, it's easy to say, well, I know it was red, but I said it was black. It's an easy one. But how about if you think something like, I meant to be there on time, right? And you never intended to be there on time. You took your sweet ass time to get doing what you were doing, but you tell somebody that I meant to be there on time. Any little thing like that where I'm being dishonest. The book says I have to be rigorously honest with myself and with people. What could I have done better? All of those questions are just really, really interesting and good questions to ask yourself. And the reason is because what I've found in my life, and I think probably every one of you have found the same thing, and that is that my alcoholic ego, that thing that I brought into AA, that drove me, it was my personality traits that drove me. I'm an alcoholic, so I drink, but I had all these experiences that I built up in my life that told me what I did was right. Those things don't go away. All those rationalizings, all that stuff is just buried down in my head. And that reemerges. And that's what happens to me when I get off the beam. I start letting that stuff take back up. So I brought a little book here. It's called AA Comes of Age, and it was written back in 1955. And they were doing workshops. This was when they had the international convention, the second one they had. And so there's a guy named Dr. Tebow, who was a very known, he was a great psychiatrist, and he was the first guy in AA, first psychiatrist in AA to really talk about alcoholism and what AA could do for you. And I'm just going to read one sentence to you from 1955. It says, I could go on with many more examples familiar to you all to show the danger of ever assuming that the ego is dead and buried. Its capacity for rebirth is utterly astounding and must never be forgotten. All right? That was two. I lied. I was dishonest. That was two sentences, not one. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But, you know, thank you for all coming tonight. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Tom. All right, the next reading is on page 86. On awaking, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face a decision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. An intuitive thought or a decision, we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still, inexperienced, and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for the presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it.
All right. This is where this whole step really hits me right square in the face. I've spent my whole life until, well, even in AA, consumed by fear. And I've been told that being consumed by fear is being totally whacked out about what's going to happen, the future. And I never looked at it that way when I was drinking, but today I realize that that's an absolute. I want to know what's going to happen, I want to know how it's going to happen, and I want to be able to rightly control what's going to happen. And unfortunately, that's out of my purview. I've learned that. It's not something that I need to even think about today. But in order for me not to think about that, I have to use what's available for me in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And part of that is thinking about what's going to happen, asking for help. That's why I have a higher power, because I have to have help. You guys can't do it for me. My higher power can. And I have to employ that stop and relax. If I use meditation, I'm going to relax. I'm not going to be worried about what's going on, because hopefully I'm going to clear my head. And then that fear that I always have lurking in the back of my head is going to be lessened. And it's not going to be in the total control of what my thinking life is, because at one time it was. That was what I based everything on, was what I was afraid of. And I actually didn't know what it was that I was afraid of. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what I was afraid of, but I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of you, and I still have that problem today. You know, I find it very hard to come up to somebody and actually introduce myself and talk to them. It's very difficult for me to do that. But through a lot of practice and a lot of effort, I can do that better today than I ever have. But it's not something that sticks with me forever. I got to continue to practice that. And when it says in here that we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. My first reaction is always the one that I used to base everything on. You know, that initial thing. You know, this is what I'm going to do. Because this happened, I'm going to do this. And today, more often than not, I don't do that first thought that hits my head and take off with it. I tend to have that little space between the thought and the action, you know, that little pause. I think of it as that little pause button that we have to employ a lot in our daily lives nowadays. So I hit that pause button, and I say a little help me prayer. You know, give me a thought. Please, give me a thought. Give me something to keep me from doing what I really don't need to do. And that's always that first reaction. So if I hit that pause button, then more than likely I'm not going to make that wrong action that I, used to always make, and I'm not going to have to go back and clean that mess up that I'm getting ready to create. So it's real important that I remember that, and the only way that I can remember that is if I practice this constantly. And so that's something I try to do. Like Donald said, I spend a lot of my bad thinking at work. You know, that's where I interact with more people than I do anywhere else. And I have to take those times at my desk. You know, I have to stop, I have to pause, I have to look at what I'm getting ready to do and how that's not necessarily going to be a good thing. An example, you know, if I don't do that, I end up out there in the shop yelling at people where I work. I have no business yelling at anybody, first of all, because I'm not a management guy. I'm just a, you know, peon. But I will take action that is very inappropriate. And it's all based on fear. It's all based on somebody thinking something of me that I have no business worrying about. You know, but I will react poorly. And then I have to go back out there and say, you know, here's what I did. I don't want to have to carry this around with me. So what can I do to help get this thing settled between us so we can work again? And that's a very difficult thing to do, especially when, you know, people that don't understand what I'm trying to do. So it's better if I take that time to stop before I go out there and yell at somebody. And I find that I don't do that as often in my daily life outside of work because, like I said, I don't interact with people very well, so I don't have to go back and clean stuff up because I, you know, just avoid that. Just avoid it. Just stay away from it. But in AA, I have more contact with people, so I have to remember, you know, don't yell at people. Don't get into somebody else's business if you're not asked to, right, Don? He taught me that lesson. You know, I want to fix things, and I shouldn't be doing that. If somebody asks me, then I do the best I can to give my experience. I don't need to fix them. I just need to tell them my experience. And if I have nothing experiential, then I have nothing to say. So it's real important that I stay in my so-called lane nowadays and don't get out of that. And one of the ways that I am able to do that is if I take that prayer and meditation seriously. Thanks.
Thanks, Glenn. You know, I was taught everything that I ever, you know, learned about doing the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, someone showed me how to do it. Someone taught me how to do it. I don't, you know, none of this is original. It's all kind of stuff that you pick up as you go through your life. And none of it's done perfectly, as Glenn had said earlier. It's just one of those things. And so while the evening review is the least used tool in the book, the morning meditation and prayer is the most used tool in the book until you stop using it, then you go out and drink. When I got sober on October 17th, in the Daily Reflections, there's a little blurb in there, and the guy's talking about the fact that some people, when he would go out and talk to people who had gone out and relapsed and started drinking again, he'd always ask them, did you ask God to keep you sober this morning? And the answer is always no. We don't ask God to keep us sober the morning we go out and get drunk. So most people, I was taught that the morning is Christmas, where you're thanking God for all, you're asking God for gifts, which is the gift of sobriety, and show me what I can do to be of service for people today. And then at night you do Thanksgiving, which is thanking God for all the gifts you had got during the day and blah blah blah. So people do the first, do this one a lot, and it was the first thing that got ingrained with me, and I do it every morning without fail. I mean, I can count on probably two hands the number of times in the last 10 years I didn't do it in the morning. Some had come up, but because it's really important. So it says here that we consider our plans for the day. So if we just wake up in the morning, how do we know we got plans for the day? Well, because we did them last night, right? We sat down and did the inventory, looked at what we're supposed to be doing, boom, we're ready to go in the morning. Get up, look at your, before you consider your plans for the day. You ask God, you'll do your prayers. I do my prayers. I shouldn't say you. It sounds like I'm preaching at you. That's what I do. And one of the things that I do is I ask God to divorce my thinking of self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Now, for a guy like me, I never thought I had self-pity. I mean, I thought that, you know, you all were just jerks. And people treat me horribly, you know. And when I got depressed about something, someone would, you know, I'd think, well, you know, they're treating me horribly. And making me have low self-esteem. I'm making me feel bad about myself, you know. And so I thought that that self-pity was low self-esteem, and it's not. It's self-pity. And the guy told me, he said, are you mad at somebody? You have a resentment? I said, well, of course, I got a lot of them. And he says, well, if you have a resentment, you can't have low self-esteem. You deserve what you got, and you think that you deserve it, so you can't be mad at somebody. It's self-pity. And the more I look at it, the bigger the self-pity is, the bigger my ego is, the worse I am. And it's just, I mean, that, to me, my experience is that the more I'm into that stuff, the more that ego has come back to haunt me. And that's important, because the problem for alcoholics centers in the mind, not in the body. The body's an important part, because when I start drinking, I'm going to keep on drinking. But if I haven't had a drink in 10 days or 10 years, there's something that makes me go back and drink, and it's not the body. It's my brain. It's my mind. It's the way I'm thinking, the way I'm approaching life. And what this does on a daily basis is help me keep current. Because the one thing I got to do in my life is to try to stay awake in the world around me. And that is important. And if I go to sleep, if I start dozing off and lying and cheating and being, you know, fearful and all that other stuff that comes up with untreated alcoholism, the next thing I know, I'm going to reach for a drink, because that sounds like the best thing to do. So for those of you who are new or something, don't know why the hell we're talking about this, that's the reason. And, you know, being, you know, I first read this years and years and years and years ago, I thought, well, dang, you know. It says, under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance. Well, God gave me brains to use. And I thought, yeah, I get to use my brains. Unfortunately, that's not what they're talking about. You're trying to get yourself in alignment with a power greater than yourself. And it says, but this way, I'm clear, my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And I think it's important, because I know a lot, I mean, I've talked to so many people who think they're telling you the truth, and they're not. There's a great line in the 12 and 12. It says, hiding a bad motive underneath a good one. And how do you know you're doing that unless you're doing inventory or talking to your sponsor or talking to somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't know that. I lie to myself a lot sometimes, and I don't know I've got a bad motive underneath a good one. All I know is, oh, I feel like, I want to, is he drinking today? You're like, no, none of your damn business. Anyway, that's another thing. Let's see. We ask God for an inspiration, for an intuitive thought or decision. Do you all do that? You all listen to that little voice? We were talking about the committee in your head. That's not the voice I'm talking about. Well, you know, I really do. That voice comes from down here, not up here, and that's the way I know the difference. You know, I can feel an inspiration. I don't hear it; I feel it. And that helped me make a decision about my life about 5 or 6 years ago that just totally changed me, changed my life, in a good way, not in a bad way. Because sometimes that happens too, right? But I was able to hear that voice. And I think everybody has that inherent connection to this power that we're all looking for, trying to, and the book and the program is telling me how to get that connection. We wouldn't be sitting here. You know, Carl Jung said this guy Roland Hazard in the front of the book went to go talk to Carl Jung about how was he going to get sober, and Carl was trying to help him. He was trying to give him a spiritual experience. And he had certain steps he was walking him through, but he was unable to do it with an alcoholic of his type. That's what he told him. Even though he was successful with other people, he couldn't do it with an alcoholic. And then all of a sudden, Bill and Bob come up with the first 100 guys come up with this thing. And this is an objective thing. If you do what this thing says to do, you will have a spiritual experience. I don't know of anybody that hasn't completed the project that has not had a spiritual experience. And then once you get it, this is how you keep it going. So that's important too. And then it says I don't struggle. You know, I'm all about fighting. I love to fight. I know, if I'm not fighting with myself, I'm fighting with you. And so I had to learn how not to fight, how not to struggle. And that is an interesting thing to learn. I learned that by doing what? Where am I being selfish, dishonest, resentful, and afraid? I mean, it's that simple. And sometimes it's so simple, it's horrible. that's another story altogether. And it says here that being still inexperienced, you may, you know, blah, 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 it's probably you're not going to be inspired at all times. You may pay for this. Yes, make sure you have a sponsor to talk to on a regular basis, and that person can help you walk through this process. But it says, nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration, and we come to rely on it. And the reason why that's important is that one day your sponsor is not going to be here. One day your sponsor is going to die. One day you're going to move away and not have a sponsor. And you're going to take you some time to find someone. And the reality of the situation is that this is about God and you. This is about having a relationship, my relationship with God of my understanding. And that's where this lies. And so while it's important to be able to talk to people, for me, and go through that process as well, I have to rely on a power greater than myself, or if not, I'm relying on human power, on a friendship, you know, on a phone call to 3 AA buddies, you know, which is like using them. You're using them for a while. But it's important for me to do this and remember that that's what this is about. Because there'll be times when you need that and there'll be nobody you can talk to. Because it's happened to me. I've been in a situation where I needed something and couldn't get to it. But I had God. I had a program. I practiced it. I knew what to do and did it. And it worked out perfectly. In God's time, not mine. All right. Sorry.
Thank you. All right. The next reading is on page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we have been shown all through the day what our next step is to be. That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that and it does not work. You can easily see why.
All right. Like Donald said, I try to keep it real simple as far as my prayer in the morning. I ask for help to stay sober today. that's pretty much the extent of it. I don't get too involved in asking for things, but the whole point of that is to be of service to my higher power and the people about me. That's the reason I ask for help, to stay sober, because that's been my charge since I got sober, but more, it's been my charge since I went through the steps out of the book, and that's what I've learned. So I have to remember that being a person, and I'm sure I'm not the only one here who is very strong-willed, and I still am at times.
You think?
Yeah, really. So I have to remember that I have to have help with that, and along with that strong will is an ego to match that tells me I'm okay being that way. And sometimes that is so. But most of the times it's not. Most of the times it's a problem. So I have to ask for help with that, because there's, like alcohol, I can't do anything about myself. You know, I've come to understand that. I can't change the way that I am. If I want help, or if I want to do something about the way I am, I have to ask for help. I have to be given what I need in order to change. So I have to keep that in mind. I grew up in a Southern Baptist home. So I was taught how to, yeah, I know, you don't have to get away. I was taught that it was okay to pray for what I wanted. And that's just the way they do it. I don't know why, but that's just the way it seems to be done. Or at least that was my interpretation of that. Now, I have to qualify that. I was 11 years old when I quit going to church, so I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what I remember. So I have to remember that I'm not to pray for things in a selfish way. And I see the idea of asking for help to stay sober as not being selfish. I mean, sure, it's all about me, you know, but the idea behind that is that I get to be of benefit, that I get to share what I've gone through with somebody else if I stay sober. And that's the whole key to this thing. So when I ask for help to stay sober, I'm really not being selfish in the way that I've always been. And I have to remember that I have a hard time praying for somebody else, because I don't know that I have any idea of what they need. That's the real difficult thing for me, and that may be overthinking it, I don't know, but if somebody else asks me for a prayer, I'll say, okay, you know, I hope that God gives you what you need, and that's about as far as I can go with it, because I don't know. I can't say that you don't need to go through what you're going through. You know, who knows? So I ask for those person to get what they need, just like I ask for myself in the morning to get what I need in order to get through the day in a sober way. And that's where I leave it. I try to not get too complicated with it and just leave it simple. That's it.
I'm the same way. I was taught that if someone is sick and you're asking God to grant this person health, then you're playing God. You think you know what God has in plan for this person. So you have no clue what that is. So what they taught me to do, which I think is wonderful, and I do it all the time, is when you do the prayer, you ask God to show me how I can be of service to this sick person. And that way I can do what my main charge is to do, and then God can do what his charge is to do, and whatever happens, happens. But I get a chance to be there and be helpful as much as I can to anybody. And the other thing is, you know, I must have been, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years sober or something, and I started praying I wanted to win the lottery, because I was a spiritual guy, and I'm going to be really good with all that damn money I'm going to get. And so I would like do a little prayer and say, you know, I'll, you know, help me win the lottery, and and blah, 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 and I'll do this. I swear, help me do the lottery. And because I had, you know, I it took me 5 years to get to zero for financially. So anyway, I'm in this meeting one day, and this guy says, he goes, you know, did you hear blah, blah, he died. He died. He goes, yeah, his number was up. I went, God, I meant the Virginia lottery, right? Not that lottery, the Virginia lottery. And then I was like, so anyway, don't you know, when you're praying, making sure you ask accurately what you need to ask for, rather than just say the lottery. You don't know what the hell you'll get. God answers prayer. It may not be what you're looking for. I think that's all. The freedom from self-will is really important, but we've gone through all of that. I think for me, you know, you do the quick prayer, you do the prayer in the morning, and do meditation. I was taught this is a spiritual program and for material people. And so that is the way we work this thing. This is the way I work this thing. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in the morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
All right, like I said before, I try not to get too deep into, you know, different prayers, different things that, you know, reading something and meditating on it. I try not to do that because I think it, for me at least, it gets too involved and too off the point of what I'm trying to do. So if that works for you, great. I just don't see that works for me as well as it as keeping it as clear and clean as possible. But I do consider what I do in the morning and at night a very private thing and a personal thing, and I don't generally invite anybody in because of that. I can't tell you where I learned it, but I learned that going to my higher power was something I needed to do individually. And listening to what my higher power has to say through meditation is the same thing, something I need to do individually. But that's another reason I don't generally go to, you know, these meditation workshops and stuff like that, because I just don't see how that's going to benefit me with a group. So individually, I would work with somebody one-on-one on that kind of thing, like my sponsor or somebody else that knows a lot about that. But doing the actual process of prayer and meditation, I'm not one to mix. I just don't do that. When I hear a fifth step, you know, we offer our higher power a chance to come in and guide us. And beyond that, you know, that's as much as I usually get into a group type prayer or meditation type thing. So it's to me real important that I keep my pathway clear and focused, and that's why I consider it, you know, an individual and private thing. My experience, please don't think that I'm saying that's the only way. It's just one of the ways that I found it works for me. That's it.
I'm kind of the same way. I've never been married. Well, I got married once. It was only for 9 months. And so I've had people in and out of my life, but I like doing this by myself. And so that's kind of where I am. I think Glenn's right. If you want to use those things and do those things, that's terrific. You should do it. And it says, be quick to see where religious people are right. That's, you know, there's a lot of good stuff you can find out there. You got to read it. It gives me a chance to go out and do exploration, reading about different religions, different denominations. All that stuff is great. It keeps me on a path of spiritual development. But in the morning when I'm doing this stuff, it's very private for me. So anyway, that's me. And if you all want to do it, have at it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, continue on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are there, then, in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works, it really does.
This whole idea of wasting time and energy is something that I have a lot of experience with, because as I stated, you know, I have a tendency to react and overreact, and it's surprising. The older I get, the harder that is to recover from. You know, I spend a lot of energy trying to force my will on somebody else, especially vocally, you know, and very loudly. So I have to I have to remember this, and I touched on it a little bit earlier when I said I sat at my desk after making an ass of myself and ask my higher power what I need to do. Although I already know what I need to do, you know, I say the little prayer, and if I can get in touch with my sponsor, I tell him what I did, knowing exactly what he's gonna tell me to do. And then I approach the individual with the with what I need. I'm armed with what I need in order to try to straighten out this situation that I created. And it's funny how many times in a day I will create situations that I have to go back and redo. That's why today, if I have a crappy day, I need to look at it. And that's why I need to look at it at night, go through what happened, and I can eventually find out why it happened, even though that should be rather obvious. And then talk to somebody about that and see what is necessary to take care of that. But I also have to remember this one word that's in here, this humbly saying. I have to remember that I have to approach all of this with a huge touch of humility. That's something that is very elusive. Because if I'm not careful, I'll drift off into that ego part that it talked about earlier on. You know, morbid reflection, that's ego, just the other side of the coin of I'm not getting what I want, so I'm gonna force the issue. You know, those two things are on the same coin. So I have to remember that I have to approach this with some humility. Asking, it's always, remember, asking for what I need in order to do what I should do. And if I keep that in mind, like it says, fear, which is my big bugaboo, which causes anger. You know, it says anger, but fear is the motivator for that. And worry and self-pity are all, they're all right there together, because all of that stuff is based in my ego. That I'm not doing something that I need to do, and that's why this has come up, and that's why it's bothering me. And that's not true. The truth is that for the most part, unless I sit down and do the meditation or prayer, I don't have a clue why it's going on. Like Donald said, self-appraisal is not my strong suit. You know, it's something I've been practicing, but even today, that's not necessarily my strong suit. So I have to remember that when these things, excitement, fear, worry, self-pity, foolish ideas, or decisions, I'm sorry, foolish decisions, maybe ideas too, when those are going on, it's time to drop back and do an inventory of what's causing this. Why am I having these things happen in my life? And generally, today, it's not really hard to see, because I've been doing this for quite some time. But if it is hard to see, I've got people that are willing to tell me. This guy right here is one of the best ones, because he knows me real well. We've known each other for 24, going on 25 years. And he knows me better than I do. And it's just really incredible to have somebody like that in my life. Even my sponsor, he, as long as I've been going to him and everything, this guy here knows me more than he does. And but he's an AA, and he's somebody I can go to and ask questions that I know will be honestly answered. Not that I like that a lot. It usually, you know, tweaks my sensibilities a little bit. And I, you know, I have hurt feelings for a little while, but, you know, given the situation, I usually come around to what he's told me because it's the truth. And I don't get the truth if I'm not looking at myself through this process. That's what I have to do. I have to look at myself. That's it.
You know, it says, we pause and agitated or doubtful. I don't know about you all, but I never was able to do that when I was drinking. I mean, pause. Agitated and doubtful was a state of living. I mean, it was just the way it was. So I get sober, and I'm still agitated. I'm still doubtful. I'm trying to learn how to not do that. And the thing about this is that this whole thing, you know, not once it talked about the desire to drink in this thing. It talked about the way I approach life. It talked about the way, having had a spiritual experience, what do I do to maintain that experience so that I don't, so that I can stay sober. I mean, that's sobriety is not just not drinking. And you know, I don't care how long you've been here. There are a lot of people who have 20 years plus who are about as batshit crazy as anybody you've ever met in your life. And it's because they don't know how to stay sober. They don't know that. So anyway, in my life, this became something that became more and more easier to do. But it just takes a time. It takes practice. You got to work at it. And you got to ask for God's grace, because a lot of this I can't do by myself. I ask God for the power to carry out his will. The great thing about this step, when you read the whole step, we praying for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. So I'm asking for power. And if I get it, I ought to use it. I have to use what is given to me so freely. So I apply this in my life. And, you know, Glenn's right. You know, humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. I don't know about you, but it took me a long time to get to really mean that sentence. It's hard to really mean it. Thy will be done in my life. You're running the show. I'm not running the show. And I don't like that, because I want to run the show. I want to get all the credit and do all the stuff and get everything. You know, that's not the way this works. This is not that. So it's a difficult thing to learn how to do. But once I learned how to do it and really meant it, I got what results were really. And the main result is peace of mind. If I'm not running the show, then I have some peace of mind. I can do what I'm supposed to be doing and not worry about whether or not I'm right or wrong or make a mistake or whatever. This is going to be what it is, and it works out, whether I screw it up or not. And then it says, we're much less danger of excitement. I just love they put excitement first. You know? I'm more of a victim of excitement than I am to, you know, dishonesty or being depressed or something. When I would drink it, I love to go out and celebrate stuff. And if I had nothing to celebrate, I'd just celebrate it anyway. You know, because I'm a positive kind of guy and I like that kind of excitement in my life. And so I'm a victim of that because I have this attitude about the way things are. And so if I'm in, then fear, anger, worry, self-pity, foolish decisions, all that stuff is a result of what? Untreated alcoholism. You don't have this if you don't do this. If you have this now, you need to write some inventory and talk to your sponsor or somebody. And burning up energy foolishly, I think that that's self-evident for people. So, you know, there's a thing. I was going to say this earlier. I used to think that time was absolute, but I think it's relative now. You know, if I'm sitting up here, this hour goes by fast. If I'm sitting out there, it might be dragging on, looking at your watch. So I'm hoping that everybody, this went as fast for you as it did for me. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we've got one more reading. I'm going to read real quick. You guys got about a minute to wrap it up. That's cool. Continuing on page 88, we alcoholics are undisciplined. So let God discipline us in a simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
One time through is not something that is going to work for me. It never has, never will. And I think of that, there's action and more action, not only for somebody else, but for myself. I have to keep constantly updated on what I'm doing. Where am I falling short? That kind of stuff. And it's entirely necessary to go through this process to do that and stay sane for a little bit. And, you know, that's why doing this disciplines me. You know, it's really weird. You know, I have no discipline, but if I do this, it sort of disciplines me. It gives me that back door discipline that I, you know, wouldn't accept if it was, you know, put in my face. That's it.
Thank you.
And I'll just say this real quick. You know, what we just read is the program Alcoholics Anonymous condensed into one day and night. This is what I do on a daily basis to maintain sobriety. And so when it says here working with others, practical experience shows that nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. People think that working with others is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not. We just talked about it. This is the message I'm trying to give to people when I'm sponsoring them and working with them. So sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I am so defiant. I am so in my own self and just refuse to see. The thing to do is to pick up the phone and call somebody. The thing to do is reach out and maybe if you're sponsoring somebody, call that person on the phone. That's what they're talking about when they say when all other activities fail, that's when you reach out to other people. Because sometimes, and I think you all know this, being sober for a while, you can't get out of your head. You can't pray it away. You can't meditate it away. It just is there. That's the illness of alcoholism. It's unbelievable. And so this next step is step 12, which is also a wonderful step. And I'm not trying to say it's about helping other people. But the program we just read, 1 through 11, is what we're trying to give to people to get sober with. 12 is us trying to do God's work. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Baskets will be passed around. While contributions cover each other's group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service offices remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of the contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all the groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Our announcements. Does anybody have any announcements?
My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa.
So if you are looking for
Good little message.
Good little message. Good little
message. Also, we have something with a speaker coming up, which is on September the 2nd, oddly enough, Labor Day. So hopefully you'll have a day off and you can come join us. 6 o'clock with a potluck. Bring a dish if you can and join us for some fellowship. And at 7 o'clock, we have Don M. coming from Louisville, Kentucky, which will be an outstanding message. So come join us for that as well.
Thank you.
Mickey Alcoholic.
Mickey.
One of y'all's other homebrew members, David F., is speaking this Friday night at the Oceanfront. Well, come on down at Bogtown, 8 o'clock.
Thank you.
18th Pacific.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
I'm Nicole.
Hey, Nicole. Welcome.
My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is
Nicole.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nicky.
Nicky. Welcome.
All right, the literature table is over here to the right. Literature is free for taking other than the books. Anybody would like to purchase a book, please see me after the meeting. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship is NAA is yours for asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after the close of the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio, recordings, and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Closing, ask the group to thank the panel. Would you like to thank them? Would someone please volunteer to read paragraphs of page 164? Be great.
Tony Alcoholic.
Hey, Tony.
Say last two paragraphs?
Yeah. Yes.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him to do more meditation, what he can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. So obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't gotten. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We have a great way to close. Father.